Judge. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. What do they do to the judge in Aruba who let the murderer go? That's what I want to know. In government, there's accountability for everything in government except for criminal justice and how you handle murderers. When you deal with murderers, there's no accountability whatsoever, even in America. We delegate what to do with a suspected murderer to a committee of virtually anonymous people. And even if they let the murderer go, like, say, for example, O.J. Simpson, then they disband and there's no accountability. If you got to buy a hammer, there's an accountability chain in this country for the government. Not that it's always functioning, but there is an accountability chain a mile long for all kinds of governmental functions. But when it comes to criminal justice, which is the single most significant government function, there is no accountability. We have committees. We have justice by committee, which happens to be a jury, and the jury cannot be held responsible. And they disband, they dissolve into the noise of the background of society. And if they let a murderer go free, even if the evidence is overwhelming, and then he goes and murders again, there's no accountability. Nothing. No negligence, no opportunity to. It's tragic. And in Aruba, there's the judge who refused to acknowledge the evidence against the murderer who killed Natalie Holloway. Everyone in the world virtually knows that this criminal, Jeroen Vanderslot, that he is a murderer. Everybody knows that. Even after the world knew that he's a murderer, then he went to Holland and a journalist befriended him. Remember that? DeVries. And this journalist spent months with this murderer and made him feel comfortable. He had cameras in his car and his home. And he got Jeroen Vanderslot on video confessing to the crime of murdering Natalie Holloway, admitting to what he did. And this judge in Aruba says, oh, that's not evidence. That's not evidence. We can't consider that. It's simply a confession where he's telling his friend what he did. We can't consider that, and we can't add that to the other evidence. And so here is a judge who's negligent, and now there's another young woman who's dead, Stephanie Flores. And in Peru, what a tragedy that they don't have the death penalty. Do you know that a number of countries around the world that have legalized child killing, the killing of a child in the womb, do you know that oftentimes within a few years time of abolishing the death penalty, that is when those countries decriminalized abortion. You realize that? In the Bible, God speaks of the death penalty as a sanctity of life command. Because man is made in God's image, therefore, if someone is convicted of murder, he shall surely be put to death, for in the image of God, he made man. So it's two sides of the same coin. If somebody kills an innocent person and the government does not execute him life for life, as God says in the Bible, life for life. If the government doesn't do that, then they are being irresponsible, and the increase in murder that's likely to come about will be partly their responsibility, their fault, and they will, their hands will have innocent blood on them. And so first a country abolishes the death penalty, and then they legalize the killing of children. Those two go hand in hand, because the foundation of the sanctity of life is lost when you do not punish people, when God has authorized government to execute criminals who are convicted of a capital crime, like kidnapping and murder. And the government says, oh, no, 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 no. You see, we're nicer than God. We're nicer than God. We want to demonstrate that the Bible is barbaric by being nicer than the commands in the Bible. So we are not going to execute kidnappers and murderers. We would rather see an epidemic of kidnapping and murder than to put to death a convicted kidnapper or a convicted murderer. We'd rather see an epidemic. And so liberals and Christian moderates, is that, does Jesus leave room for a Christian moderate? He said, if you're not for me, you're against me. And I'd rather you be hot or cold, because if you are lukewarm, I will spit you out of my mouth. That's pretty strong, no? The Lord himself saying, I'd rather you be hot or cold, because if you're lukewarm, I will spit you out of my mouth. The last time I had someone ask me about the death penalty and my pro-life position was last week. And this was interesting. Somebody I don't know, he struck up a conversation, and he asked, well, how about your position on the death penalty? He could tell that I was a conservative, that I read the Bible. And he said, well, how about the death penalty? And I said, oh, I support the death penalty. And his jaw dropped, and he said, isn't that a contradiction? Isn't that a contradiction? How can you be pro-life and support the death penalty? And I said, because we believe in punishing the guilty and protecting the innocent. And he said, yeah, but how could you be pro-life and for the death penalty? And I had to repeat myself. And I told him, we believe in punishing the guilty and protecting the innocent. And he couldn't get it. So I asked him, is there a difference between those who are guilty and those who are innocent? And he said, yes. So I said, do you think it's generally a proper worldview to punish the guilty and protect the innocent? And he said, yes. So I said, could you see then that this is a consistent position, that you want to punish a murderer and protect a child? He said, no. So which is the greater factor? Does stupidity lead towards sin, or does sin lead towards stupidity? Which is the greater factor? The greater factor is sin leads toward stupidity. Sin will make you stupid. If you like to be stupid, then celebrate your sin. Our phone number here, 1-800-8-N-YARDS, 1-800-836-9278, 1-800-836-9278. Yesterday's show was enjoyable. We had the granddaughter of William Randolph Hearst, and her name, Victoria Hearst. She's an heiress of the Hearst fortune. She didn't get it all. She got a nice chunk of it. And her grandfather actually inherited a newspaper in San Francisco from his dad. But he took that newspaper, William Randolph Hearst, and he built it into a news conglomerate. I think at their peak, they had about 30 major newspapers in the major cities in this country and magazines. And he built, I think, the largest news organization in the world and became wildly wealthy. And so, of course, as institutions do, it became immoral. It advocated wickedness, murder, adultery, stealing, socialism, so on, because that's the nature of the world we live in. Jesus said you cannot put new wine in old wineskins. Right? Jesus said you can't put new wine in old wineskins. So what happens is we build a corporation or maybe a ministry. And eventually that ministry or that corporation becomes worldly and it becomes an enemy of the gospel of Jesus Christ, even if Christians build it. So your church, let's say you go to a local church, do you expect that your church will be an influence for godliness in 150 years? 150 years from now, will your church be a good church, or will it have gone the way of virtually every church, and will it die spiritually and then be supportive of abortion and homosexuality and socialism and evolution and general paganism or even godlessness? Like the Arvada United Methodist Church, when two of our seven sons went there on an Easter morning service a while back, and the pastor of the Arvada United Methodist Church, and I have this on good authority, I have this on the authority of my sons, Josiah and Nathaniel, who told me that his Easter morning sermon, Resurrection Day sermon, he said, I'm going to tell you what I believe is the most embarrassing thing in the Bible. And he said, the most embarrassing thing in the Bible is that it says that Jesus rose from the dead. He said, that is so embarrassing, and I'm ashamed of it. And so that's the pastor of Arvada. I say Arvada because Arvada is the headquarters of Bob Inert Live, Denver, Colorado, Denver metro area. So that's the Arvada United Methodist Church. So not all, but the vast majority of United Methodist churches are post-Christian. So let's go to the phones. Our number, 1-800-8-NYARTS, 1-800-836-9278. In Denver, Dave, welcome to Bob Inert Live.
Hi, Bob. We talked once previously and didn't have a chance to.
All right.
You're an engineer, so you understand these order of operation problems.
All right.
What's more important, your beliefs or your behavior?
That's a really interesting question. And Dave, before we get right to that, you said that I'm an engineer. I've had jobs as a software engineer when I was hired at Microsoft. Rob Glaser, have you ever heard of Rob Glaser?
Not specifically.
He hired me. He's a billionaire, and this was in the mid to late 80s. And he, at the time he was the head of the networking division within Microsoft, he went on to become the founder of Real Networks. Remember Real Player?
Yep.
That, you know, one of the early internet audio and video players. Well, he made a fortune with that. It was, you know, people hated Real Player.
I did. I hated it.
Yeah, people hated Real Player. But it was an early time in the industry, and he figured out how to make a killing at that. Well, he, in the interview, he talked as fast as could be. And at the time, I was writing articles for PC Week, and I was working. I was I was a business systems analyst with the phone company, US West, now Quest. And I was a senior technical analyst writing for PC Week. And so they're interviewing me because they want me to stop writing articles criticizing Microsoft and especially their security and networking. And that was fine, you know.
That's interesting.
And Dave, Rob Glaser put a glass of water in front of me during the interview and said, verb object or object verb? And I said, object verb. And he said, why? And I said, because no person is thinking, I want to lift something in my hand and put it to my mouth. Nobody's thinking that. They're thinking that they're thirsty and they want to quench their thirst. So it's object verb because they're thinking of water and they want to somehow get the water into their body. So it's object verb, not verb object. And he said, okay, you're hired. So that was an easy interview.
Wow.
But it was fun. But and by the way, Dave, I ended up in Bill Gates' living room for dinner. And it's tragic that he supports homosexuality and abortion and everything godless all over the world with his Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. But beliefs versus actions, as compared to actions versus beliefs, which is more important? Jesus addressed that somewhat, didn't he?
I couldn't quote a Bible verse specifically.
And this is not exactly on target, but he talked about the two sons, and the one said he would do his father's wishes and didn't do it, and the other didn't want to do his father's wishes and then did it. And so I think it's a difficult question because the Bible says that if you know something is sin and you don't do it, you're sinning. To him who believes something is sin and he does it, he's sinning, even if the action itself is not sinful. For example, Dave, what if somebody thinks if I go to church on Sunday, it's a sin? What if they believe that and then they go to church on Sunday?
In their mind, they would be sinning.
Right. Even if God would not hold them accountable, as, you know, of course, there's a big debate on that among Christians. And I happen to write a book that deals with that directly, the question of the Sabbath and the seventh day and all in the plot. And we have it on audio tape and downloadable at kgov.com. But if the Apostle Paul says it doesn't matter which day we worship the Lord every day is the same. But to Israel, God said we have to worship on the seventh day. So if someone says, I'm sure it's a sin for me to worship on Sunday, but there's a girl who goes to that church and I really like her, so I can't go both days, so I'm going to go on Sunday, even though I know it's a sin, then to that person it's a sin, even if God would not have held him accountable, because to God every day is alike. Does that make sense?
It's somewhat confusing, because people generally perceive that thoughts precede actions. So if you place the wrong thought in your mind, you're going to come up with an incorrect action.
Well, as a general rule, yeah, thoughts precede actions, I mean, almost always. And so if you work for a boss and you run the cash register and you wish that you had his money, eventually that covetousness leads to stealing. That's why Jesus said that if you lust in your heart, you're guilty as though you had done it. So if you covet your neighbor's wife, your neighbor's car, your neighbor's money, then given enough time and opportunity, you will steal from your neighbor. And that's why, does that make sense? That's why Jesus said that coveting is as though you had done it.
Correct. So then it's incorrect to say money is the root of all evil, because it's not the object, it's the thought.
Yeah, money, right. Well, that's exactly true. And money is the root of all kinds of evil, but certainly not all evil. Adam and Eve didn't have money in the garden. They probably sinned against God within the first week after creation, and they didn't have money. And it wasn't money that tempted Eve to sin, but money is the root of all kinds of evil. But you know in the Ten Commandments, Dave, where it says, do not covet? It's so interesting that in our criminal justice system, we attempt to show motive when we're trying to convict someone of a crime, and that is appropriate. That helps us determine to weigh the evidence that we're looking at, if it's sufficient to convict someone of a crime. And when we see motive, we see that this person was violating God's Ten Commandments in that he coveted his neighbor's money or his neighbor's wife or his neighbor's life or his neighbor's children. He coveted them. So, yeah, sin is in the heart and the mind before it's acted out. Would you agree with that?
Exactly.
Yeah. So beliefs, you know, in our criminal justice system, they call it mens rea. I don't know why they can't speak English, but they call it mens rea, your mindset. Did you have an intention of committing a crime? And so let's say there's a mentally retarded person and they're standing on a balcony. Our friend has a condominium in Mexico on the Sea of Cortez, and it's 10 stories up, and the balcony wall is only about 2 feet high. So I don't know about their building standards in Mexico, but somebody's going to get killed there. But let's say there's a mentally retarded guy who sees his uncle standing out in the patio, and he runs up to give him a hug, and he knocks him over the balcony, and he kills him. Now, that person, that man, should not be held guilty of a crime. Would you agree with that?
Exactly.
Yeah, but let's say there was someone with a very low IQ, and he hated his neighbor. And he waited until there was no one around, and they were in the backyard, and he took a hammer, and he bashed his neighbor's head in, and then he went and hid. And when they found him, he denied what he had done. So then should a court say, well, this man is not guilty by reason of mental retardation or insanity?
No, he's definitely guilty.
He should be found guilty.
Exactly.
He should be found guilty. And so it's God's principles of justice are so simple, but when society's in rebellion against God, they take what is good and they say it's evil, and they take what's evil and say it's good.
I would agree.
Anything we didn't cover or anything else you'd like to add?
That's great. Thanks, Bob.
God bless you, Dave.
You too. Thanks.
Appreciate that. 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. It's fun to talk about the old days, back when I worked at Microsoft and wrote for PC Week. That was a cash cow for Ziff Davis. I wrote a total of 88 articles for them. I still have them. And a number of editorials. And it was really a lot of fun. All right, so Jeroen Vanderslot could have been prevented from murdering this second young lady. And her dad, he's famous in Peru. He's wealthy, ran for president twice. So it's not likely that they are going to give him a minimum sentence. They're probably going to throw the book at him. But the problem is the book, it's like a Penguin paperback book. It's not the book. I mean, the book, when you throw the book at him, it should be like a 15-pound family Bible. When you throw the book at a murderer, that should mean that he gets put to death. So it's a grave tragedy. But on the bright side, in the world of the latest news from the crime blotter, in the state of New York, they charged a woman with adultery. And that's pretty interesting. The media is apoplectic about it. And they're thinking, a woman got charged with adultery for being intimate with someone who is not her husband? Where did that happen? In Iran? Where's that? In Afghanistan? That must be in Kuwait, right? Saudi Arabia? No, it's in New York. And this is good. In Colorado, it's still on the books. Adultery is a crime. Adultery is a crime, but it's been effectively de facto decriminalized. It's still a crime, actually. What they did was the legislature some years ago went in and removed the penalty. So they didn't have the courage to say adultery is legal. You could now try to seduce your neighbor's wife, and it's perfectly legal in Colorado. They were cowards. They wanted to do evil but not be held accountable. So they didn't decriminalize adultery. They just removed the penalty. And in New York State, it's interesting that even though they stopped charging people with adultery back when the rest of the country did, back in the 60s, when they stopped charging people for perversion like homosexuality and adultery, they still have the law on the books. And so this woman and a guy half her age were caught in public on a picnic table next to a children's playground in New York. And so they charged her with a lewd act and the guy, but they thought it just wasn't enough, so they added a charge of adultery. And that's pretty good. It should not be legal to try to seduce your neighbor's wife. That's how you destroy children. If your goal is to destroy children by the millions, if that's your goal, and if you're not a Christian, and if you support our current culture in America and the sexual immorality, then if your goal is to destroy children by the millions, then you want adultery to be legal. And you want marriage to be the only contract that's not enforceable. No fault divorce. Marriage is the most important contract that we have in our existence. And it's the only one that you could violate with no consequences, no legal consequences, no fault divorce. If you destroy your marriage by cheating on your wife, you should lose your parental rights. And if she chooses to divorce you, then she should be able to divorce you and have custody of the kids. And so if we recriminalized adultery, and if we brought sanity back to our laws regarding marriage and divorce and custody, then the incidence of divorce would drop dramatically, and millions of kids would have another chance. All right, we've got another caller, but obviously it's too late. Maranatha Christian Center, what a great school. Please help us out at kgov.com. We need your help. God bless you.